Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The D-Day battle at Omaha Beach may seem like a strange topic for a chamber chorus. We'll tell you why it makes sense a little bit later in this program, after we go behind the headlines on the right-to-work issue. Right-to-work legislation is now law in Missouri. The legislation ends years of debate on the rights of unions. Or does it? Joining me in studio to take a closer look is Brad Kafka, a shareholder with the Polsinelli Law Firm. He's vice chair of the firm's St. Louis Labor and Employment Practice Group. Brad, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
You know, you would think after all the discussion and all the years of discussion on right to work that all of us would know everything we need to know. But that really doesn't seem to be the case. It is somewhat confusing.
It is confusing, and one thing that makes it confusing is the title. Right to work is a misnomer. What the statute does is place a prohibition against employers and unions from entering into a provision in a collective bargaining agreement that requires employees to continue their membership or to continue to pay dues or fees in order to maintain their employment. So it only has to do with paying dues or fees. It has nothing to do with whether someone can work or not.
What does it mean to employers, and what does it mean to the worker, aside from the outlay of cash, dues?
For employers, it depends very much on the employer's perspective. Many employers believe that this will provide them opportunities they did not previously enjoy. Other employers and businesses believe it'll attract business to the state. Unions often believe that it'll decrease the pay because unions, of course, have always been drivers of higher pay and benefits, and to the extent that they're weakened, and let me explain why they are likely to be, it may have a depressing effect on wage rates. Now, one aspect of right to work is that while employees do not need to maintain or do not need to pay dues or other fees in order to maintain their employment, the union is still obliged to represent them in all aspects, just as it would for people who do pay, for employees who do pay. So that means the union must spend its resources negotiating collective bargaining agreements, adjusting grievances, handling arbitrations for individuals who choose not to pay dues or other fees.
Is there a certain percentage of employees here that we're talking about? In other words, we still have the union in Company X.
Yes.
And they may or may not pay dues, correct?
The union employees.
Well, they may – go ahead.
Yeah. Today they would be obliged under most collective bargaining agreements to pay dues in order to maintain their employment.
Right. Is there a percentage cutoff of the number of employees that would be required to do this or not required to do this?
No. Under the new law, no.
Suppose there are only 5 union members and there are 500 employees.
Then the union could disclaim interest in representing that group because it is not – it does not think it can do so economically.
You know, it seems that this boils down and the primary discussion is that businesses are for right to work because – wages are likely to go down, and the unions are for it because they want to at least be able to bargain collectively.
I think there's another aspect to it, and that's a little more just another nuance. Yeah. And I think you're right; that is a factor.
Yeah.
Another factor, though, is that many employers feel that unions restrict their freedom. Mm. And they feel it very deeply. They believe that unions make it more difficult for them to be flexible and to act quickly. And that belief and they dislike unions for restricting their freedom, and that belief is very deeply held. And the people who say that are very sincere, and to them that is more than just the immediate dollars and cents. Unions believe, in addition to the fact that they are pushing for more employee wages and benefits, that they provide protection for employees. That does sometimes and work rules, and that does sometimes restrict flexibility. That other aspect, which we don't talk about as often as much, I think is very deeply held by the opposite sides and is as much of a factor as wages and benefits.
What is likely to happen now? I mean, I think we can establish, and maybe you'd like to talk about this, establish the fact that over the years, certainly since World War II and until relatively recently, unions have played a very, very important role in establishing a vibrant and solid middle class, and that it's because they have been able to bargain for wages and working conditions.
Well, there's I don't think that right to work in Missouri will have an immediate radical effect on unions or on the workplace. I think it's – and unfortunately, the research on this is very poor, not mm-hmm. just in Missouri but everywhere. And unfortunately, the research is often the result is often determined by who pays for the research. I mean, I know that's a shock for you, Don.
No, that's the way it seems to work in a lot of different areas, yes. Needless to say.
Yeah, and so I think it's hard to find rigorous research that one can really count on. But I think on an anecdotal basis, it's fair to say that there may be some businesses for whom a right to work is a factor and might be influenced, not as a primary factor, but as a factor to come into this state. And I think it's fair to say that there are some that if unions become weaker because fewer employees are paying dues, that wages and benefits may go down. But do I think that unions will disappear? No. Do I think there will be a dramatic change in unions in this state? No. But I do think that over time they are likely to become weaker because they'll have fewer dues-paying members, and I also think it's likely to affect some industries more than others.
As unions become weaker, if in fact that happens, what does that mean in terms of our society, would you say?
Well, there are so many different factors. I'm reluctant to generalize, but what you say is true, that unions have played a part in American society since the National Labor Relations Act was first passed in the 1930s. I mean, we're talking about a piece of legislation that was passed in the Depression and has only been amended twice, once in 1947 with the Taft-Hartley Act, which contains a provision that allows right to work, and once in 1959, and that's it. So it has been very much a part of unions of American society. But right to work as a statutory option for states to choose has been around since 1947, and unions have not disappeared, although the number of members they represent has gone down and the number of workplaces they represent has gone down. And right to work is certainly a part of that.
Union membership, I think, now is 12-15% of the workforce, something like that.
Yeah, even lower perhaps 9%.
That low, single digits already. And just a few years ago, not too many years ago, it was up around a third of the workforce, wasn't it?
There was a time in 1947 when the Landrum-Griffin Act was passed, it was 34% of the workforce. So it's a dramatic change.
So what do we know about what has happened in states that have had right-to-work laws now for a period of time in terms of whether it attracts business and what has happened to wages in those states?
Once again, the information is very conflicting, and I think it's fair to say we don't know much for a certainty. There is research that shows that overall those states that do not have right to work have higher wages and benefits, but they're also higher cost of living states. So everything is higher there. If one makes an adjustment for that, at least one research study suggests that there is still a 3% difference in wages and benefits between non-right to work states and right to work states. But that research project was performed by the Economic Policy Institute, which is funded by unions. But I mean, it's a fine research institute, but it does – you know, its money came from union sources. So we're entitled to be skeptical, right, Don? Mm-hmm. I mean, and so I can't say with confidence that is absolutely certain. There is information that suggests that right-to-work states have grown jobs more – a little bit more than non-right to work states. When you compare before now, there were 27 right to work states and 23 non-right-to-work states. Kentucky in January became a right-to-work state, and Missouri will become so in August when this legislation goes into effect. So some argue that they have grown more – those states have grown jobs more quickly over time, and that right-to-work is a factor in that. Reasonable people can differ on it. And if one looks at Missouri, at least in the last year, Missouri's grown jobs more quickly than all of its right-to-work neighbors, but it's only a one-year sample. And then we can – what period of time would we like to go back to make our point? Pick a year and you and I can make the argument either way. So I think it's very difficult to argue cause and effect when it comes to right-to-work. Mm-hmm.
The governor signed the right-to-work legislation just a couple of days ago, and you say that it will be implemented in August.
Yes.
I think a lot of people expected that it would be go into effect immediately. Why this lag time?
Well, in Missouri, all legislation goes into effect in August unless there's an emergency provision, and there is no such provision in this legislation, in this bill. Well, now statute.
But it is being challenged, however.
I don't think there is much of a legal challenge to it. What will happen is there's a possibility of a referendum. Now, I find it hard to predict whether that referendum is going to take place prior to August or get on the ballot prior to August of this year. That's a complicated process and involves signatures and all sorts of things. The referendum, of course, were to take place prior to the legislation taking effect, would of course supersede the legislation. Even if a referendum takes place after the legislation takes effect, it would still supersede it. So, I think there's a reasonably good chance that there will be a referendum. I just don't really know whether it'll be before August or not.
Right. Well, they have to collect an awful lot of signatures. I forgot the number, but there is a significant number to be collected.
Signatures have to be collected. It has to be placed on the ballot with a sufficient notice period. It is not an elegant procedure.
Yeah. Assuming that it does go into effect, and that's where we are right now, between now and then, what happens to union employees and non-union employees?
Between now and then, the law as it now stands remains in effect. And I'll mention that the right-to-work law in Missouri, similar to almost every state that's passed it recently, has a retroactivity provision for existing collective bargaining agreements. So if there's a collective bargaining agreement that's in effect today, it has a provision, a union security provision, requiring employees to maintain their union membership or pay other fees, it will remain in effect for the period of the contract until it expires, even if that's after August. But once it has to be renegotiated or renewed, then no additional union security provision or requirement of paying dues or fees will be effective.
But one of the things we need to make clear is the fact that contracts will still need to be negotiated following passage of right to work or its implementation of the right to work.
Oh, you raise a very good point, Don, and that is that unions will push very hard to have contracts now that will have right to work. I'm sorry, that will have union security provisions that require the payment of dues or other fees and make sure they're passed, make sure they're ratified and agreed to by employers between now and August. And that will give employers leverage, of course, to bargain for other things during that intervening time because employers would like to have the benefit of the leverage, and unions would like to make sure they get as many years as they can on a collective bargaining agreement that will be grandfathered in with respect to payment of dues or fees.
St. Louis and the St. Louis area has always been known as very, very heavily pro-union.
Yes.
What happens now? I mean, obviously things are changing, and things have changed because union membership is down. But kind of what happens now to unions in St. Louis, would you guess?
I don't see an immediate drastic effect. I think there will be some effect greater effect for some industries and lesser effect for others. Let me tell you one industry that I believe will have very little effect, and that is the building and construction industry. That's because in the building and construction industry, employees are trained through the unions, through apprenticeship programs. And then when they go to work for employers, they're assigned to work for their employers, they're assigned through a union hall. And so and their work by nature is itinerant, meaning they're going from employer to employer. So the result is that they're trained and they're getting their job referrals from the union, and they tend to be close with the union for that reason. And in addition to that, they don't tend to be connected with any one employer. So I think in the union construction industry, and particularly the skilled crafts, I don't think we'll see big changes in St. Louis. Now let me give you a contrast, if I can, to another industry, and that's the service industry. And let me take one that we're both very familiar with, everyone in St. Louis is, and that is supermarkets. Schnucks and Dierbergs have long been represented by their employees have long been represented by unions, and it's the United Food and Commercial Workers. And every employee, including part-time employees who work there, are required to pay dues or other fees to maintain their employment. Well, some of those part-time employees don't feel much of a connection with the union. Some of them are young people. Some of them are people who are just doing it as retirement jobs. And they don't really care that much because they're working part-time. Maybe they'd rather have the cash. And I think that's a concern for those unions, and I think they will be affected most quickly.
And young people whose parents probably didn't belong to a union because their membership is declining don't have that kind of union tradition. That may be why they're don't care so much about them.
Yes, I think that's true. They may not care because we're all influenced by our parents. And also part of it is that it's a part-time job. They don't see a benefit from union membership. But they have no perspective from which to see it.
It used to be that Dad had a good union job, and Junior would anticipate having a good union job also when he grew up.
Yes, and I would have to say that there's few examples of that left, few industries in which that is a true statement today, with the possible exception, again, of the building and construction trades, which is still what used to be a father and son situation. That might be a father, daughter, or son situation because there are plenty of women in the union crafts. And that there may be some truth in that today for those who want to follow the same path.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to end it right there, Brad Kafka. There are a lot of questions that remain to be answered, and a lot of let's wait and see what happens. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank
great,
you for inviting
great
me.
Great to talk with you. Brad is from the Polsinelli Law Firm. Before we take our break, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. St. Louis City Aldermen are dealing with a financing plan today for a proposed soccer stadium, as well as a proposal to refurbish Scott Trade Center. And a Democratic House member from St. Louis wants to reduce the state sales and use tax on feminine hygiene products. Representative Gina Mitten says such products are, quote, a necessity for women, not a luxury. Several cities have recently made similar law changes. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day at our website at stlpublicradio.org. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.